the people in line with the administration, as you are seeing right now on the streets, the future would be even brighter than today. We are reaching the maximum, let's say, the glass ceiling of the sanctions and the hostilities and the limitations that all the world could put on Iran. And they have not been successful anymore. We have witnessed the maximum pressure campaign that one of the most outspoken enemies of Iran in the White House, the Donald Trump, had put on Iran. They have even admitted that it failed. So the future would be much more in favor of Iran because it is passing through all these difficulties. Right now, even we are receiving news from the negotiations in Vienna right now about the nuclear program. And even if those negotiations fail and no agreement is made and no sanctions are removed, even at that time, the future would be for Iran, because Iran has reached a level not only to be a regional power, not only be successful in keeping its independence and security in this volatile region in West Asia, it has also been successful in providing a new, role in the world, and it is now working with other sanctioned people and countries. It exports oil and fuel to Venezuela. It exports oil and fuel to Syria, to Lebanon, and it is ready to work with any other countries which are sanctioned. So if further sanctions are imposed on any other countries, Iran would be there for them. And there is no further sanctions to be imposed on Iran. Any further sanctions would be in favor of Iran in some way, we can say.
Okay, Mr. Golamzadeh, let me just get Ms. Birya in here before I say goodbye to both of you. Ms. Birya, your final comments. I mean, you heard what he was saying just now, Mr. Golamzadeh, and talking about the future. And we've seen the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, who has said that the future is bright. I mean, basically, we have seen so much pressure in these 43 years that everything that basically the enemies of Iran could throw at it, they have done. And still we see Iran thriving. Your thoughts, your final thoughts today on that?
Yes, of course, I concur with your guest, Mr. Golamzadeh, that the future is bright. But it is conditional. You have to understand that why is it that the United States has been pressuring the Iranian people for 43 years? It is because you cannot conceive of a revolution without people. The people are the main obstacle against America's wishes in the region. So the Iranian people have to keep their unity. They have to understand what the real picture is. And of course, there are signs on that you can get from the other side that shows that Iran has been on the right path. For example, I was reading this article last month that was published at the beginning of January in the New Yorker magazine. The reporter Robin Wright talked to Kenneth McKenzie, who is the head of the CENTCOM, he leads American forces in the region, in the Middle East region. He was saying that Iran has reached overmatch. That is a critical word, which means that Iran has reached a level of capability in terms of strength, and of course he was talking about military strength, that Iran cannot be defeated anymore. So the United States understands that Iran has come a long way, and it could not have come this long way without the support of the people. So the Islamic Republic has had the support of the people all along, and that has been the reason for all the achievements that it has. It has reached a level of capability in terms of defense, in terms of its relationship with the rest, the other countries, other people in the Middle East and all around the world who are seeking independence from the dominance of the United States. Iran has moved, has started under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, and after that under the leadership of Imam Khomeini and with the support of Imam Khamenei and with the support of the people, Iran has started a specific and a different system of decolonization around the world, which is based on the Islamic tradition, which is rooted in the concept of Tawhid. This is very, very powerful, and it is not stoppable. If I want to use the words of Imam Khomeini, Imam Khomeini addresses the people, the Muslims of the world, in one of his messages. He says, you have to overcome the fear of death. And that is what the Islamic Revolution has given to the people. The idea of Shahada, the idea of martyrdom. That's why? Because you are actually right now in a state of gradual death under the dominance of the United States. You know, if we realize that, if we give in to the pressures of the United States, we will grow back to that system of gradual death that Imam Khomeini talked about, then it would be much easier for us to withstand the pressures. And of course, I am sure that the Iranian people are going to be steadfast, and they realize the situation right now, that we are in a critical situation, that the United States is not the same United States that we had back in 50 years ago or so. The United States is much weaker. The idea of American exceptionalism is no longer holding, that the United States is a superior nation that has to lead the world and that it is invincible. The Islamic Revolution has shattered that myth, and that is the lifeblood of the American system of dominance. So we have to keep steadfast, and the people of Iran have to realize that, and I'm sure they do that, they do realize that, and under the leadership of Ayatollah Khamenei and with the support of the Muslims around the world and the freedom fighters around the world, we are going to go all the way. And this second stage of the revolution that has started at the beginning of this decade, we are actually 3 years into this second stage of the revolution, is going to end with an independent region, hopefully. Okay. And with the help of Allah and with the support of the people, this is going to happen.
And on that note, I thank you so much, Hakima Birya, Professor, University of Tehran, and political analyst, and also Hamid Reza Ghulamzadeh, political commentator out of Tehran. Thank you so much, viewers, for continuing staying with us at Press TV. Don't change that dial. We still have a whole lot more to show you. This on the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution right here in Iran. Stay with us.
As Iranians celebrate the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution that transformed their country from a U.S. ally to a bitter opponent, Yemenis are still facing a deadly U.S.-backed war. This has urged Yemeni politicians to try to learn more about the Islamic Revolution and its stance against U.S. hegemony.
The region was about to fall prey to the American Zionist project, and the Arab regimes would have given up on the Palestinian cause, resulting in the further oppression of the Palestinians and the deterioration of the Arabs' dream of liberation from American hegemony. The Islamic Revolution turned Iran into the first country to be freed from U.S. dependence. It created a psychological balance among the people. As for the Arab puppet regimes, they feared the danger of the people and delayed their normalization with the Zionists. Today, Muslims are aware of U.S. dominating policies and find liberation necessary.
Yemeni politicians and scholars say the Islamic Revolution keeps on inspiring Yemeni people to stand against the U.S. and its supported forces in the region, just as they did on their September 21st revolution 8 years ago.
I still remember the outbreak of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. I was studying in secondary school and Arab people were constantly talking about it. We even wore t-shirts with the image of Imam Khomeini. But given the importance of this revolution, many Arab dictators started to ban the clothes that had the image of Imam Khomeini on them. And this is one of the first memories that they have of the Islamic Revolution. The Yemeni people have learned a lot from the Islamic Revolution in Iran. It encouraged them to stand against the colonial policies in their own country. And this also sparked their revolution of September 21st, 2014.
Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iran has always been a strong supporter of the Palestinian cause and has marked the International Quds Day. And now it is also standing beside the people of Yemen and the U.S.-backed Saudi led war against them.
Observers say all the free people of the world must look up to the Islamic Revolution of Iran and follow in the footsteps of its leaders in order to stand against the U.S. hegemony. They say the Islamic Revolution will remain a source of pride for all Yemenis. Reporting for Press TV, Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
And welcome back to Press TV's rolling coverage this morning, this on the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Of course, that revolution took place in 1979, and that what you're looking at, that image right there, was actually the image that was shown to the world during that time and became symbolic of the revolution itself. You're looking at these live images now coming in from across the country this morning. These images right now actually coming out of Tehran, where there's a combination, it seems, of actually automobile convoys, motorcycle, and actually people on foot. Though in the red cities, people were asked to be in their cars and on their motorcycles, trying to keep health protocols. And in the other cities that are not in what they call the red zones now here in Iran, the cities with the higher number of Omicron right now. You'll see now we'll be showing you people that are walking and, of course, doing the traditional type of rallies. In Tehran, we have more of a combination of both, but now you're looking at those live images there coming out of Qom, that for the most part people are in their cars showing their support for the revolution. 43 years on. And I'm happy to be joined in the studio now by my guest this hour, Mostafa Khoshchesh, a political analyst. Thanks so much. Glad to see you again. You know, when I look at these images, as an American, I remember from the very beginning of the revolution, different type of propaganda from that time on. And I mean, one of the things, first of all, in the very beginning, they said that the revolution wouldn't last 6 months. Another thing that they would say always in the media there on the anniversary of the revolution was how people were paid to go out show their support for the revolution. And it's really interesting because now that we're in the middle of a pandemic, and we know that if people were afraid of their health or whatever, no money, of course, could buy that. I want to look at this whole propaganda technique that has been used throughout the four decades. At the end of the day, have they been effective with that propaganda and creating this evil, negative, dark image of Iran or not? And why have they done that?
Hello, and thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you again. Well, first, congratulations to all lovers of the Islamic Revolution on this 43rd anniversary. To be honest with you, they are doing what they should do, since they are the enemy. They do the animosity. The Americans know pretty well that their illegitimate interests in this region are in danger because of the Islamic Revolution. Not just the Islamic Republic, but the spirit of the Islamic Revolution that represented a role, the country as a role model, and also a paradigm for standing on yourself as an independent nation rather than being subdued and being a proxy of the United States. So they've been doing their best in order to tarnish the image of the Islamic Republic and Islamic Revolution. And since we're living in an age of communication, social media networks, websites, and news media outlets, that's the best means in order to mislead the public in and outside the country about the realities, about the truth. So they've been doing their best in order to misrepresent the cause, the ideals, as well as the ideas behind the Islamic Revolution and the status of the country and the people. So maybe in some parts, maybe you can fool people, some people for some time, but you may not fool everyone forever. It's true that the media outlets as well as other means of communication are fully in their hands. I mean, they're in control. The numbers cannot be compared with the media outlets and the communication means that Iran has. It's no surprise if they succeed sometimes in misrepresenting Iran and the truth mislead the public about the truth and realities which are happening in Iran. But gradually, people throughout the world came up with several questions. How come you're right that people in Iran do not like their government, do not like the establishment, do not support him, and they like what you say, then how come the establishment continues to be there for 43 years? And how come Iran has earned so much power in the region, in the military fields, in nanotechnology, in stem cell technology, in cancer treatment and diagnosis, and also in space technology, in rocket technology, in satellite technology, and in many other fields of science and technology? How come they've become a power? How come all millions of people take out to the streets each year on annual Quds Day rallies or February 11th rallies in support of the Islamic Republic as well as the Islamic Revolution? So it's it's this very important point that has beaten them. They've been beaten by the fact, by the truth, by the fervent support of Iranians for their Islamic Revolution, that are steadfast on this road, on this path towards the ideals and cause of the Islamic Revolution. Gradually, after social media outlets appeared and expanded throughout the world, people have come to realize better what's going on in here, though there are many misleading pieces of news and, you know, misrepresentations and scenarios done by the Western, you know, giants, giant firms that are in control and own social media networks, though they do dictatorial, you know, some kind of hegemonic rule over social media, you know, platforms. Like when they cross out the name of Qasem Soleimani from Instagram, from sometimes Twitter or from Facebook.
Don't you think they become more blatant with their censorship, thus allowing for others to really be able to see? Because when I look at it and thinking about in the past, I feel that they were perhaps a lot smoother at the way that they covered different situations with the semblance of trying to be fair. Whereas now, especially on social media, as you've just alluded to and talking about, of course, the name of General Soleimani, how they would actually just sometimes just delete the total account. So don't you think because of that type of blatant type of action that in many ways that people have been able to see through that or not?
Yeah, that could be the reason, part of the reason, actually. Mm-hmm. I do believe so. It's very important to note that it's not just the Iran or Haj Qasem Soleimani that they do this to him and to Iran. It's not just us. You know, whenever they don't like something, they censor and they cut it out altogether. I remember quite well when there was this kind of confrontation and rift among American people in their own society when Donald Trump, you know, encouraged people to stage a raid on the Congress. And then they started, you know, cutting out thousands, tens of thousands of accounts from Twitter. And they showed that they don't care even about American people. They don't care about democracy. They don't care about anything but themselves. They are the elites, the class of elites, who do not care for any country, for anything. They just care for themselves and for their own rule. They are the rich guys behind the stage who control and who try to control minds of the people. Now, it depends, of course, on the situation. Sometimes they see the U.S. fit. If, you know, they see the United States is no more fit for their plans, they would move to Canada, move to China, move to somewhere that they could do what they want to do. They want to control the world.
Let me stop you right there. It was an interesting point you just made. So what we're seeing as you talk about these neoliberal elites and what is going on, and that a country is not important to them. The goal is important. With that being said, then, do you think that makes the appeal of the message of the Islamic Revolution, Islamic Republic, even more? Because it's not about nationalities, ethnicities, and even religions. It's about seeking freedom. It's about being against oppression, which can appeal to an American as much as it can appeal to someone in Angola.
Exactly. A few years ago, I was talking to a woman, a journalist, and you know, she lives in Beirut, in Lebanon, and she was telling me that there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Shiite seculars. And I said, "What?" She said, "They're Shiite seculars. They are not religious guys, but they adore the Islamic resistance, Islamic revolution, and the resistance front in Iran, in Iraq, Syria, or in Lebanon." And when I was asking them why, how come you're not religious guys, and then you are supporting very strongly, of course, you're supporting the Islamic resistance front. And she told me that it's the message that's very much appealing. It's the message that comes from some 14 centuries ago from Karbala, from Ashura, from Imam Hussein, that if you do not have religion, if you're not, you don't have faith in any religion, at least be a free man. This is a very important point. You know, this is our instinct. This is our essence. This is our nature, that we would like to be free. We never accept to be, you know, subdued or under the yoke of no matter it's the United States, it's Biden, it's Trump, or whoever it is, we would like to be free. That's the one of the main messages that has been admired by people throughout the world. And that's why Iran is very important to them. That's why they get happy. You know, when we remember some 15 years ago more, there were 16 British soldiers, Navy forces, who crossed Iranian borders in southwest Iran, in, you know, on Arvand, and they were arrested, captured by the IRGC naval forces, and they were forced to kneel, and they were taken to Tehran, and all these images were broadcast. It was under the presidency of Ahmadinejad, I remember quite well, and their images were everywhere. One of my friends told me a few years later that on the same day when the news was, you know, everywhere, he was in Africa. He said people suddenly took out to the streets, and they were distributing candies and doing festivities. They were celebrating the situation, and he said, I thought that it's, you know, an occasion, a traditional occasion of that country or something. And I went there and asked them, what's this occasion? Why are you so much happy? What is it? And they told me, you don't know? You're from Iran. You have arrested 16 British soldiers. And I told them, and I asked them, how come you're happy? It's my country. I should be happy. Then you're all out distributing candies. And then, why? And the answer is very, very important, because he said, they told me that it's an Islamic country. Eventually, after one or two centuries, one Islamic country has succeeded in beating the British colonialists who have been occupying our lands and colonializing our continent, our land, our territory. And we are happy to see that they are paying back. It's a retribution, and we are happy for that. So this power, this independence, this freedom of action is very much important to everyone who has been suffering from the British or the American or the West colonialism and hegemonic rule.
That's very interesting, that story that you just said. So if we put that in perspective, then is that the main reason that we continue to see so much pressure coming from these entities, because of the international appeal, actually, that this revolution has? So it has to be something in a way that is misrepresented in their perspective in order for it not to reach that mass appeal, especially in the West. Is that part of it all?
Yes, of course. Let me give you tangible example facts. 2006, it was autumn 2006. It was a congressional hearing when George W. Bush was having his second term. Condoleezza Rice was the Secretary of State. And the House was under the control of the Democrats, Senator Obama, Senator Kerry, Senator Clinton and others were in charge in there. There was a Senate hearing at that time for the fiscal year of 2007 and the State Department's budget approval. That was the session, actually. And they were reviewing the U.S. foreign policy after two wars in the Middle East, in Iraq and Afghanistan, after spending several thousand billions of dollars in the, you know, having several thousand U.S. soldiers killed and killing hundreds of thousands of people throughout the Middle East. They were shouting at Condoleezza Rice for this wrong approach, and they were saying, how come we've spent so much money, we've given so many soldiers, but in Afghanistan, the government that has come to power is very close to Iran. 7/8 ministers are Shiites. And in Iraq, Saddam Hussein was toppled by us, but now a Shiite government close to Iran is in power. And then in Palestine, for the first time in this 2006, we have been having a free election according to UN norms. And the one faction that comes out of the ballot box is Hamas, which is close to Iran. The last time we were occupying southern Lebanon, we were there for 20 years. That was just 6 years ago, and now after 6 years, we were kicked out in 33 days. I mean, the so-called invincible army of Israel was kicked out by Hezbollah, that's a close ally of Iran. And forget about there, when we come to the backyard, to Latin America, everywhere, these are the wars, wars for wars. You could Google search it. The session was 2 hours and 5 minutes or 10 minutes. All throughout the session, they were talking about why we are being kicked out of everywhere, mm-hmm. and it's because of Iran.
Stay with me. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to have to cross over right here in Tehran. I believe our correspondent, Yusuf Jalali, is on the streets of Tehran telling us what's going on, Yusuf.
Well, Marzia, the streets are getting jam-packed by people. Of course, I told you earlier, I didn't expect such a huge number of people coming on foot to take part in the march. So it was expected to be held in the form of motorbike and car parade. But now we can see a lot of people coming on foot, and that has to be voluntarily. That has to be done voluntarily by these people as a means of and a show of support for the Islamic Republic. So it's the 43rd, of course, anniversary of the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. And every year we see huge crowds taking part in the commemoration ceremonies. This year, due to the coronavirus pandemic and the resurgence of the coronavirus, the government urged people to take part virtually on social media, virtual commemoration ceremonies. But we can see that people have come and taken part physically in the commemoration ceremonies. To these people, the rallies represent their support and allegiance to the Islamic Republic, still after 4 decades. And to the authorities of the Islamic Republic, it's a means to, it's a litmus test for the amount of support, for the level of the support, public support for the establishment, for the existing political system. And huge turnout is translated into a public mandate for the legitimacy of the system, of the political system. And here it goes. You can see three people from all walks of life are taking part, chanting slogans in favor of the Islamic Republic and against the United States. Why the United States? Because these people believe that the U.S. is still trying to topple the Islamic Republic. I think around a year after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Iraq imposed and waged a full-scale war on Iran and on the Islamic Republic. And that war was supported logistically and financially by the United States and the Western bloc in general, and as a means to topple the newly established political system at the time. And right now, these people say the United States still tries to deal a blow to the Islamic Republic by imposing sanctions and economic pressure against the Iranian nation, to pit the Iranian nation against the government. But such huge participation and high turnout by the people means that those pressures are pointless. Those pressures are futile. So these people want to send all these messages to the West, to the world, by saying that they still hold on to the beliefs and the ideals that they stood for four decades ago. And there's another point in the rally, and that is these people want to teach the new generation about what they did, what they their fathers did four decades ago. These people want to convey and pass on all of the messages of the revolution to the new generation. That's why you can see people coming with their kids to teach them about the revolution. And I can see many, many families have brought along their kids to teach them about the revolution, about the character of Imam Khomeini, who Imam Khomeini was, and why he was so popular among the Iranian people, how he managed to lead the movement and the Islamic revolution while he was in exile. He was around 14 years in exile in France, in Iraq, and other countries, but from those countries, he led the revolution to victory, ultimately and finally, in 1979. How that charismatic character managed to lead the revolution, and what were the motivations of the people to take part and take to the streets and listen to the instructions of Imam Khomeini at the time, and taking to the streets and ultimately toppling the Shah, the Pahlavi regime back then. All of these historical points can be taught to the new generation in this important and historic day and these important ceremonies. So, again, the rallies were supposed to be in the form of motorbike. As I can see, also some families are riding on a motorbike holding the Iranian flag, and I can see that some of the people are riding pillion on the motorbike. Some four people even riding pillion on a motorbike holding the Iranian flag and trying to show their support. The entire family is riding pillion on the motorbike to show their support for the Islamic Republic. Of course, all of these, all of this enthusiasm can be felt right now. Happy vibes. People are really taking part, and nobody was expecting such a huge turnout this year, at least because of the coronavirus pandemic. But again, the majority of the people are observing health protocols. They're wearing their face masks, at least. So I hope we wouldn't face another peak in the Omicron cases. But this is what this is the reality on the ground. People want to show their support. People want to talk to the world and send these important messages to the world.
All right. Thanks so much. That's Yusuf Janali on the streets of Tehran this morning, of course, covering the rally commemorating the 43rd anniversary of the revolution. It was interesting, as he said, this was supposed to be a car and motorcycle rally, which it is still. But in Tehran, also, a lot of people have taken to the streets. But throughout the country, we have seen people, again, turn out in mass. I'm continuing my discussion this morning right here in the studio with political analyst Mostafa Khoshchash. Again, thanks so much for being with us. You know, it's interesting. You saw the images, and as always, from young and old, different generations, everybody come out. I want to look at something. What the leader of the revolution calls the second phase of the revolution. He talked about that about 3 years ago, and entering a new phase. And, of course, at the end of this time frame, we see the ultimate goal is Islamic civilization. Tell me the challenges you think. First of all, I want to talk about the challenges that the Islamic Republic faces right now in reaching these various goals that the leader talked about in phase two of the revolution.
Well, first of all, you know, for the audience that's not very much probably familiar with the Iranians and live somewhere in the world, probably far in the west or the east, Iranian people are, you know, very much respectful for health and hygiene orders. Iranians are one of those nations that have been accompanying their government in, you know, with regard to containing the COVID-19 outbreak, and especially when you consider the vaccination rates, you know, are high, and when you consider that this country is under the harsh economic sanctions, the toughest ever imposed on any nation by the United States, it would be very hard for them to obey the government orders for shutting down their businesses, but they have always complied with the rules and regulations. So, but now when it comes to the, you know, rallies, though they've been called to avoid, you know, staging parades, I mean, appearing in the streets on foot and in person, they still go out to mark the revolution victory anniversary on foot. And this is very interesting to me. It shows that they don't have, you know, they're not kidding about the revolution. No matter what, they would like to show their support in person. And this is very interesting. This has a very strong message, by the way, to those that are right now in Vienna, to those that are in the Congress. It's a very good message to them that you have failed already in beating the Iranian nation. Your maximum pressure campaign has failed. All the troubles you have caused to this nation, from coup d'etat efforts to or attempted coup d'etat, assassination, bombing, and provoking others to wage war on this nation, supporting terrorist groups, economic sanctions, foreign currency meddling, industrial and economic sabotage and espionage, cyber attacks, media and psychological warfare, and whatever else you have done to this nation by means available in all hard, semi-hard, and soft warfare zones or areas, all of them have failed. And despite all of these, people are standing firm in support of their government. You may not be them. So you got to change the path. You got to change, you know, shift your path and go for another option. You have to respect this nation. If it hadn't been probably for these pressures that they've been waging on this nation, maybe in some fields, the Islamic Revolution civilization would have been far ahead. But in some areas, it's truthful, it's honest, without any slogan or mottos chanted here. In some parts, some of these economic sanctions have helped the nation to stand on its feet and go for relying on itself. Like when they are not supported and they are under much sanctions in area of nuclear technology or nanotechnology or in many other areas of high tech, Iranians developed it by themselves. So if it hadn't been for all these sanctions, probably we've been a customer of military tools like missiles of other countries, but they have helped Iranians develop, you know, science and technology. This has been very difficult, very cumbersome task at high costs. We've given many martyrs much blood on this path. It's been, you know, we've been suffering for that. But, you know, getting bigger, growing up is painful, you know. And when you are growing up as a nation, as a civilization, as a regional and global power, you have to endure the costs and the pains and the suffering. So,
I mean, let me just jump in here because you just talked about due to the pressure, due to the sanctions, a lot of times Iran was made to actually be self-reliant in various fields. And it made me think about the, especially the beginning of this pandemic. We saw mask piracy on the high seas by these so-called advanced countries. Mm-hmm. We saw theft of masks at airports, and that was from their friends. Besides, what would they do against those who they consider adversaries? We saw this actual control over the vaccines and not wanting to give to other nations. And immediately, it was quite interesting. What we saw in Iran was immediately working towards developing a vaccine. immediately people coming together and making masks. We saw shortages on the shelves in many Western countries and people even beating each other. And what we saw here was more of a community type of effort to try to beat this all. I want to look at this and put it in perspective. How did the Iranian people get here? This whole, because Iran, you talked about so many of the different type of methods of pressure that has been used against the Iranian people. And yet we see that they are vigilant. In the middle of this pandemic, when other countries that definitely did not face this kind of pressure was falling apart, Iran came together. Hmm. What do you attribute this to?
Sometimes I tell my 21-year-old son that if it hadn't been for the American animosity, maybe the Islamic Revolution would have not grown so much. People would have not helped the country and supported the establishment so much. You know, the main theme or the main cause is, to me, the religious identity and history of this nation. Everything, to me, most of this story stems from the story of Karbala and the Imam Hussein, the third Shiite Imam. It has touched the hearts of the Iranians very deeply and profoundly. And they've been finding themselves, you know, in this, on this scene on a daily basis, the fight between good and bad, evil and good. And they have always been hearing this message from Imam Hussein 14 centuries ago that if you are not, you know, a faithful, at least be a free man and help me. Every day is Ashura. Every day is this battlefield that I'm fighting right now. It's not finished today. Every day is Karbala. Everywhere is Karbala, and every day is Ashura. It means that if you do the right thing, you are helping me no matter where and which century you live. So Iranians have been brought up with this kind of culture and identity. And at the time of the revolution, revolting against a U.S.-backed Shah that was considered to be brutal, a tyrant, an oppressor, the scenes of the various scenes of demonstrations and Islamic during the Islamic Revolution back in 1979, people were being shot at, and they were being killed in sometimes in hundreds, on you know several occasions in several cities, you know, it portrayed. I mean the kind of things that were happening those days. They portrayed the scenes of Karbala, and as if it was Karbala and Ashura. And ever since after the Islamic Revolution, because of the U.S. animosity, because of the Iraqi imposed war on this nation, somehow assisted and provoked by the United States and other Western countries, people continued to experience the same kind of, you know, situation. Throughout the past 43 years, people have been experiencing that they are being, you know, pressured under the brutal attacks of the United States and its allies that very much resemble Yazid of the time. So they find themselves on the scenes of, you know, Karbala battle. So they were forced, when you are under pressure, you stand united. Either you submit or you get closer to each other. So the pressures of the United States and its allies have forced this nation to stand closer to each other. And once they saw and experienced that, they are being admired by people throughout the world. Like what I said, even the enemy, the United States state officials were acknowledging in that session in 2006 that even in the backyard of the United States, from Cuba to Venezuela to Nicaragua to Bolivia, wherever people, you know, whoever it's from the left party, whoever is a socialist, these are their own words. Words of Kerry, words of Obama, words of Hillary Clinton and others. whoever is closer to Iran, whoever chants death to America, he comes to power. How come this is the case? Despite all the billions of dollars that we are spending, Iranians do not have a large military budget. They're not present in Latin America. How come their idea, their love, is present in here? So they were, you know, they were astonished. They were surprised and somehow felt fear. And this is because of, you know, when the Iranian people see that they are being admired, supported, and by the other nations, the free nations throughout the world, they are encouraged to stand more and more. And they've beaten, you know, the largest power on earth that has been attacking them by various means throughout the past four decades, so they stand closer to each other. One of the hard tasks that you just mentioned, I mean, you refer to the Islamic Republic, to the Supreme Leader's message that came 2 years ago about the second stage of the revolution in the next 40 years. One of the main, you know, objectives of that message was transferring the responsibility of this revolution and its ideals and causes to the younger generation. This is a very, very difficult and very costly and very risky task, mm-hmm. that you replace the older generations with the youth. This is very hard, and this needs a lot of, you know, this requires lots of planning. One of the challenges that we have in this in this arena is media. You know, Iran has not been spending much on the media compared to the adversaries like the United States. Even the U.S., you know, the U.S. State media budget that comes through the Congress amounts to over $660-something million each year, not for domestic media, but just for one cause, fighting off the impact of adversaries' media outlets beyond their borders. And by adversaries, they mean Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, especially Iran, China, and Russia.
Not even counting the regular mainstream media budgets.
Yeah, and the budget of Iranian media, I don't think that it's even 20% of what of this great budget that they have, you know, ratified in their Congress each year. But the point here is that when you have a message, so much important message that has made the United States feel in danger,
1 minute left, go ahead.
Feel in danger, then you have to take it out better. So you have to work out on your own social media networks when you are being censored. When your most important icon, Martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, is, you know, cut out of Instagram and other social media networks, when you are exercising this censorship, you need to develop your own media outlets, your own social media.